Welcome to The Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show, so stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point.
Hello, friends, and welcome to The Point, the home services podcast that focuses on marketing and operational solutions to help you get better. Because if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. Now, let's cut through the bullshit and get to the point.
Hey, what's up, To The Point listeners? It's your host, Chris Yano, along with my co-host, the handsome, tall Paul Redmond. My friend, how you doing?
Hey, thank you for the compliment, Chris. I think you think I'm handsome because, incidentally, you and I are dressed exactly alike today.
Identical.
And I told you I was the V-neck guy before you were the V-neck guy, so I'm a little uncomfortable with it.
What I'm a little nervous about is, I noticed that you literally wore even the exact same hat that I wore. But you know what? Listen, I've been wearing this for a long time, so you just keep trying to match me. I don't know what you're trying to say about V-necks. I've been wearing them for years.
I'm going to hold my ground here. But other than that, man, it's good to be back with you, fresh off of vacation and feeling at home, because here we are once again with another guest, and I am the third most interesting person in the room once again.
You know, some of our listeners might say, no, I'm kidding, buddy. And listen, to everybody that's listening that said Chris Yano has been great on the podcast and left Tall Paul out, I just want you to know he took that very personal, and he's been whining and complaining about it, even though we know that you meant that was overarching for everybody. So there you go, Paul.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
We're excited to have a guest in the studio today, which is always way more fun for us. It's a lot better to look somebody in the eyes and have a conversation versus through the damn computer. About six feet apart. With the exception of Paul. 6 feet apart, we are socially distanced, okay? We took temperatures before we came in, we're good. So if you're listening and you're worried about that, stop. So we're going to get into this. We actually have a mutual friend, our guest today too, Mr. Bobby Jenkins in Austin. Shout out to my friend, Bobby Jenkins, Paul's favorite guy, also a cyclist. We're not getting into it, so don't even start it, Paul. But our guest today is with a company I've known about a long time. It's based, started in Phoenix, Arizona. It's in multiple locations now in Phoenix, Tucson, and Vegas, right?
Yes.
And it's a company called Burns Pest Elimination, right on the I-17 on the north side of Phoenix. I would consider that the north side.
Yeah, it is.
Right? Yep. So, Dave Burns, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
So, your official title is El Presidente?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I wanted to make sure. Now, so I'm excited about this because we do have some pest control listeners as well. But this, if you're listening right now and you think this is all about pest control, then stop worrying about it, because there's plenty of straight up business knowledge in here. And listen, this has been a successful company, and we're going to talk about some best practices. So you're going to get some really good nuggets out of this. It's just going to be a little extra special for our pest elimination, pest control companies. Okay. So Paul, are you ready to get into it?
Let's do it.
On a scale of 1 to 10, where are you at?
Oh, I'm always at a 9, teetering at 10 just for safety reasons. What about you?
That's okay. I'm always at a 10. You know that. I didn't even know how to respond to that. I was expecting you to say like 20 or something like that.
I love it.
So I want to get into this. So you have Burns Pest Elimination has been around since 1983.
Yes.
And your dad and you started this thing.
That's correct.
Uh-huh. So where did your brother, it's Danny?
Danny, my brother.
When did he come into play?
Right after we started.
Oh, okay.
My dad has always been an entrepreneur. All his life, you know, we grew up in family businesses. My dad manufactured boats when I was young, so I would work at the shop and play in fiberglass, and I learned how to paint boats and learned how to drive boats and do all that stuff. And so, things just kind of progressed when we had an opportunity to start Burns.
So since you brought it up, and we were talking about this pre-podcast, so I want to talk about it real quick. You talked about this boat, the boat business. You raced?
I did. Boats. I've been racing boats since I was 13 years old.
And we're not talking like remote control boats, y'all. Okay? We're talking about the real deal Holyfield boats. And you did some stuff at Lake of the Ozarks, which is this teeny tiny little lake in Missouri. So I heard you, let's talk about it real quick. I want you listeners to understand what I've got sitting next to me, because what I've learned in the first 15 minutes of meeting Dave is that we actually have a lot of similarities in our risk assessment of life. So why don't you share with the listeners real quick what you did over at the Lake of the Ozarks?
It was a few years ago. I've progressed in and out of all types of motorsports, but I got into offshore power boats. So I had a 36-foot catamaran with two 1,800 horsepower motors, and so they were big monstrous things.
Massive.
And so there's an event at the Lake of the Ozarks called the Shootout, it's the fastest boats in the U.S. come there, and they're in different classes. I was lucky enough to set two world records there that still stand
world
today.
Records.
Yeah, yeah,
that's awesome.
So I've been, my boat, I set the world record in at Lake of the Ozarks. I ran 167 miles an hour in a mile
on the water.
On the water from a standing start. And then on the smaller boat, I ran 134 or 5 miles an hour in the same mile. And I've been almost 200 in offshore power boats.
On the water, that would freak me out. I mean, it's just because of the water is somewhat predictable, right? Somewhat predictable at times, but you just never know. It's not like it's asphalt.
Not near as predictable as asphalt. Asphalt's flat.
Exactly.
Rogue waves and 6 foot chop make a difference.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. So, and what you didn't know is my background comes from open wheel racing, IndyCar racing. So the only thing we had to worry about was what's the temperature of the track and what's my tires like, you know. So, which is way less risky. So a fast side bend's 208 mile an hour Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which is right around where I grew up, which is probably one of the best days of my life. But the track is flat. I mean, you know, there's no waves, there's no nothing like that. It's just temperature. Now that being said, that temperature goes up 2 degrees, and I have a little extra tire pressure, then I could come around real easy.
Walls are real hard.
Real hard. I know. I've learned. My wife won't let me ever do it again.
Man, we have so much in common. I mean, I ride bicycles 22 miles an hour in spandex with a banana in my pocket. I'm one of the guys, right?
I'm sorry, what?
All right. So I know you guys know Bobby, and Bobby and his brothers rode cross country.
Cross country.
Hey, that's phenomenal. But I've done 7 Ironmans.
You've done 7 Ironmans?
You've done 7 Ironmans?
7 Ironmans.
Are you shitting me?
Nope. Steve,
good Lord, when did you do this?
I started at 50.
Holy shit, I had no idea.
I went through my change of life crisis, and I started deciding to do Ironman. So when you tell me you ride a bike for what, maybe 60, 80 miles?
Here we go.
I say that's really cute.
Oh, I love it. So tell our listeners what exactly an Ironman is by definition.
By definition, it's back-breaking, killing, complete destruction of your body. Starts early in the morning with a 2.5-mile swim. Just get warmed up.
Yeah.
Open water.
Open water, yes, absolutely. Yep. No pools. Usually it's cold. I did Ironman Coeur d'Alene, and the water was 38 degrees.
Yeah, because you're up. Coeur d'Alene's in
Idaho.
Idaho, that's right.
Yeah, and then you jump out of the pool, jump out of the water, run to your bicycle, and you don't change clothes. You just wear what you swam in.
That's great.
So then you throw your shoes on, you get on your bike, you get to ride for about 125 miles.
That sounds so fun.
With no, you're not allowed to draft. And drafting is a big deal.
No,
yeah. So you're not working together. You are by yourself in the wind, 100, 120 miles, whatever that is.
Yeah, you have I think it's like 15 seconds to pass someone. So when you come up on someone, you've got 15 seconds to pull out past them and get away. Otherwise, you're penalized for drafting. Yep. So yeah, cheating. There's no drafting. And then after you're done with the little bike ride, then you hop off and you run a marathon.
Jeez. Change shoes. You got to change shoes.
Oh, yeah, you do change shoes. You know, you usually grab a hat, you know, and you have different food sources. So you usually grab a little, a little different food source and off on the road you go and you run a little marathon.
Mike, I love it. You've done seven of them?
Seven of them, yeah.
Unreal. Amazing. I was taken back by that. I would have never guessed. I'm sorry for completely. I'm like, no way.
Yeah.
That's super cool. What that tells me, Paul, is we got somebody with a strong mind over here.
I like it.
Mindset. That's the way I take it. Because there's no way you get through that without having a strong mindset.
No for question. Sure.
And you got to be a little crazy.
Got to be a little on the nutty side.
Way nutty.
For sure. Well,
way nutty.
It's the same guy that'll drive 200 in a boat.
Good point. So that's awesome. I'm glad to know that. That's really cool. I want to commend you for that. That's no small feat. And so what I want to do is that's a great way to parlay into what we're talking about. Because listen, business ownership can sometimes feel like an iron man. I know we've been through it as we've grown over the years. You guys have been around since 83. So I mean, I was four in 1983. So it's been around for a little bit. But it was not a smooth sailing deal the whole time. I'm certain of that. I'm sure it's not been perfect, but let's do this. So for our listeners, let's let them know, we kind of talked about how you got into it. Cause you know, your dad and you got into it early on for whatever reason, but let's talk about the progression of the business to today. Because, for those who don't know, Burns Pest Elimination is a well-established, well-respected, pest elimination company here in the Valley. And then I just learned recently that you were in Tucson and Vegas as well. But walk us through kind of, once you got into it, you know, how you just kind of give me the history, how you got it, like you and your dad got into it, but maybe why? Because I think he sold something for you guys to get into it. I think I read somewhere. Uh-huh. But like, just go through that process and let them know kind of what you've accomplished before we get into some of the other details.
So I grew up in family business, and we, the Burns family is very tight. I have two brothers, a sister, and so we have always been family oriented, you know, Sunday dinners, all those things.
Love it.
Go to the races together, sports together. Everything was family. And I'm a big family guy.
Yep.
To this very day.
Same.
So it was, 1983. I went to ASU and, that was in the late 70s. So I am old, really. the economy through the 70s, if you remember, wasn't great. We had 20% interest rates. Fuel had skyrocketed and fuel shortages. There were lines at the gas pumps. You had to get gas on odd or even days based on your license plates. You might be a little young to remember.
No, but I recall.
But that's what the 70s looked like. Okay. So when I left school, my dad was in the boat business, and I always planned on running my dad's boat business. That was boat manufacturing. That's what I knew. That's what I grew up doing. And the economy turned so quick that it was a matter of 6 months before he had to make a decision on what to do. And the decision was close that business down, and he went into real estate. I had nothing to do. I was at ASU. I have a finance degree. So I did what, I did what I needed to do. I went into banking. And banking led me into finance. Finance led me into a fortune, at that time, a Fortune 100 company by the name of BorgWarner.
Small little.
So you knew, most people knew of BorgWarner as transmissions for cars, hospital beds. Well, they had a whole financial division.
Can I tell you real quick what BorgWarner reminds me of?
Yeah.
The Indianapolis 500 trophy.
That's right. The BorgWarner trophy.
Absolutely.
That was their automotive industry. Well, I was in their finance industry. We did everything from mobile homes to leverage leased airplanes to, do you guys ever remember the Yugo car?
The Yugo, yes.
Okay, so yeah. BorgWarner was the seed money for the Yugoslavian manufacturing company that made the car. BorgWarner was the money behind the importing of the car. And I was in Dallas, Texas, involved in partly with all the financing, wholesale and retail of the Yugo car.
Wow. I guess I didn't know that part of it.
So my goal at that time, being a young man out of college with a finance degree, was, you know, I was going to be the suit in the top tower. That's what I was going to be. And, you know, that's where I was headed. I started with them in Phoenix. They transferred me to their Dallas branch where I moved into some of these other areas. And then they came to me in late 83. And again, economy in the 70s and early 80s, Texas was like a ghost town. And I got to be really good at consolidation, looking at things that made money and things that didn't make money, figuring out how to divest out of those things that didn't make money, get something in return for it, and make our profit centers more profitable.
Hey, Paul, who does that remind you of?
Oh, I'm so stuck in the story, I can't think.
Reminds me of Ken Goodrich.
Yeah, right.
So I was really good at it. I had a knack for it. And so so Texas at that time in the early 80s was turning into ghost towns. You had entire strip centers that had no tenants. You had the repossessions were of homes and cars, and closings of businesses were at astronomical rates throughout the state. So we did some things. We divested some things. We made some money, and then I got a knock on my door from my regional manager that said, "You did an awesome job, Dave. We're going to promote you." I'm like, "Cool." And he said, "You can have your choice." I said, "Okay, what's my choice?" He said, "You can go to Charlotte, North Carolina, or Chicago."
Chi-town.
I went, "Okay, cool." And so I talked to my wife, and my wife is very supportive. I love her dearly, and she has stood by me from, we've been married 37 years, and she is the greatest woman you can imagine. And
gotta have that support.
And you have to have that support in your life in order to make these things work. So I this was late around Thanksgiving, and my dad called me, and he said, "Hey, what are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm actually going through some things and planning some future stuff." And I said, "I'm gonna go on vacation though. What are you doing?" He goes, "Well, I got some things I wanted to bounce off you." I'm like, "Okay, I'll tell you what. My dad is in Phoenix. My wife and I are in Dallas, and my wife is from Colorado, Southeast Colorado, farmer." And so I said, "Hey, let's meet in Colorado." My wife's family had a cabin up in the mountains outside of Denver there. And I said, "Let's meet up there. We'll go snow skiing. We'll hang out at the cabin. We'll just catch back up because I haven't been home in a while." Cool. So we plan this trip. I put in my vacation and away we go. We meet up there. And my dad says, "Hey, you know, let's go out and talk." I'm like, "Okay." And he says, "I got something I want to talk to you about." I said, "Yeah, I got something I need to talk to you about too." And he goes, "Well, you first." I said, "I'm getting transferred." And he said, "Oh, really?" I said, "Yeah." I said, I have an opportunity to either go to the regional office in Charlotte, or I can go to the corporate office in Chicago." And I said, "You know, I'm leaning towards, you know, the corporate office because I think, you know, it's my best move for the future." He goes, "How about Phoenix?" I go, "Yeah, no, I already shut Phoenix down. We don't have an office there anymore." And he goes, no. "Come back. Come back and run a company for me." I said, "You don't have a company. You're in real estate." He goes, "Well, I sold a house."
About that.
"I sold a house to a guy," and he was a friend of the family's. He said, "I sold a house to a guy. He's moving from Phoenix to Payson, and he wants to trade me my commission for a pest control company.
Unbelievable.
I'm like, huh? A what? A pest control company. You know, the guys that come in and spray for your bugs and stuff? I'm like, well, what the hell do I know about pest control? Why would I want to run that?
He says, you know finance.
I said, how big is this company? He goes, well, it has 43 customers. I said, 43 customers? Oh, wait, you're talking like $20 a month, right? 43, that's like $800. Yeah, how the hell am I going to live on $800, you know, and we haven't even paid any bills yet? And he goes,
and you're spraying, buddy.
Well, and he goes, well, I just think that you could really build something out of this. He says, I just think this service business model's really got something. Again, remember, my dad's very entrepreneurial. He sees things. And I'm like, really, Dad? I said, you know what, buddy? I really got to think about that, Dad. You know, I appreciate it. And let me ponder on that.
Yeah, big shift. So, big shift.
Oh, my goodness. So I'm laying in bed that night, and I tell my wife, I said, hey, honey, I know this is going to sound stupid, but my dad, you know, just offered to, you know, to start this company in Phoenix. It's a pest control company. I don't know much about it, but, you know, I said, are you okay with Chicago or Charlotte? And she looked at me, and she goes, no. I went, holy shit. Are you kidding me? I mean, now all of a sudden I'm finding out you don't really want to go. She goes, no. I will go. I will support you to the ends of the earth. You just asked me if I wanted to. I said, no. I'm like, oh
boy.
Frick. Okay. Frick. So what are we going to do here? She goes, well, we've been talking about starting a family and I just went, you know what? Now is the time I got to nut up as a man and take care of my family. My wife is not happy with this. I'm a family guy. I'm moving her across the country away from her family even further. I'm further away from my family. And she goes, I don't want to raise our kids without family. I'm like, yeah, what? That is the point. That is the point. I can't raise my kids without family. I went, okay, you're right. I said, let's move back to Phoenix. Done. And she said, okay. I said, she goes, how are we going to live? I said, well, let's try this pest control thing out.
Very modest.
let's try this pest control thing out. And here's the worst case scenario, babe. I'll go back into banking. I could get a job as a banker any day, anywhere. I said, so I got that to fall back on. Said, it's not a lot of money, but I can do that. That was Thanksgiving, right after Thanksgiving of 1983. I moved back just before Christmas. My dad made the deal on the company. He actually ran the route for that first month. The guy showed him how to spray, because that's all it was, is, you know, spray. Just some spraying.
So he ran the 43.
He did the 43 accounts that month. I don't think he did them all, though. He swears he did, but I would argue with him.
He skipped a few.
I would argue with him. So I came back, and I really delved into it, and I started to realize that this wasn't about spraying bugs. This was really about service. The widget was just bugs, but this was about relationships. This was about making people happy over a problem. And all of a sudden, things really started to come together for me. And I realized that this wasn't, we could turn this into a marketing machine. Because it's the widget of pest control is something that everyone needs or has a need for at some point in their life.
It's a solution.
And so that's where we started. And so within the first 4 weeks, I had to move. So in the morning, I would get up. I would do all my paperwork and get that. So my day started really early. I would go out and I would do the services. I would try to stop in the afternoon so I could do some sales. Then I would go home. I would grab some dinner. I would make my phone calls. I would set up my schedules. I would do all those things. Then at night when my wife went to bed, I would do all the bookkeeping and ledgers and all that stuff. We started out, all of our customers were on 3x5 cards in a shoebox. That's how I kept track of everything.
Sounds like the startup life.
Yeah. And so, so within, you know, that first month, I was like, hey, you know what? I need to move out of the service side of it into the sales side of it. I need to be the marketing arm of this thing. That's where Danny came in. Danny was
your brother.
My brother. Yep. Danny was, he was in the automotive industry, and he was kind of in the same boat. It was, you know, bad economic times. You know, the stuff that he was trying to move into wasn't coming together. And so, boom, Danny came on board.
So now it's your dad and Danny.
Yep, me, my dad, and Danny. My dad still run the real estate company, so all I hear from him is screams out of the other room because we worked out of his house. Most realtors work out of a house. Yep. And so he would yell from one room to the other that I needed to get my ass out and get to work and all that stuff.
Encouraged.
Encouraged,
of course.
So that's how we started.
That's awesome.
That's how we started.
So then for a reference point, I mean, that was 83.
Yes.
So today, significantly different because you work with not only, home, residential locations, commercial locations, but also homeowners associations and things like that. You've grown this thing into like a wildly successful, pest elimination company. So where is Burns today for reference?
Today we, in 2019, we serviced about 83,000 customers.
Damn.
83,000.
Wow. I have about 300, I think I got about 320 employees now.
Dang. Well done. Yeah.
That's a serious business.
Yeah. The HOA model is really good because then you get all those. Like you get big, some, those are good. I served on the board of our homeowner association where I live for 4 years. And I realized when I saw the different RFPs coming in for the new vendors or anybody that's coming in, you know, what that process is like, but also the value of it.
Yeah. Well, what we found early is the business isn't about the pest elimination business isn't about the service that you provide. It's about the relationship you build.
Certainly.
And so, we started out early in one of our verticals, which was food manufacturing, and restaurants. And so what we found out is the manager at the local restaurant today, will probably be fired by, 6 months in, and he'll be the restaurant manager somewhere else, or the manager at the Hilton will be over at the Marriott. And so if you build those relationships, those guys naturally just carry you along.
Yep. Yep. That makes a lot of sense. And we have some similar things that with us, because even though we have some manufacturer relationships in the HVAC business, you know, that is, people do kind of go back and forth between different, and they want to take you with them and things like that. But it is based on a couple things. It is, the relationship is certainly key. I would still say on my end, from being a recipient of pest elimination, is it is nice to not have bugs.
Absolutely.
So that particular service is key. And I feel like from the residential side of things, and I don't know how much of yours is what the balance is there.
We're about 50-50.
So
that's the model I like.
Got it. So, yes. So that nice, good little balance. Yep. There, is sometimes it's gotta be tough because we, I have, our place I was talking to you about up in Walker is like, I'm in the woods.
Yes.
So I'm kind of in there. Home, right? Like, so I'm trying to keep them out of there. Like, that's pretty extreme now. Even, down here in Anthem, it's, crickets go crazy. Like, sometimes it's these random black bugs, sometimes it's scorpions, sometimes it's like, I don't know, like the service side of it to me is equally as important as the relationship side of it.
You know, there's no question you have to, you know, we believe as a core value at Burns that we're going to over deliver everything we get.
Great.
But the real key is to be able to communicate with your customer on what their need is, because everybody has different thresholds of pain. You know, there are some guys that just like to ride bicycles with a banana in their spandex. And then there are guys that like to do Ironmans, you know, where you spend 14 hours just totally annihilating your body.
You're right. That's a completely different kind of man. Or woman.
Thank you.
So everybody's threshold is a little bit different. Well, if you in your business life, if you'll realize everybody's threshold is different, yep. It becomes a matter of communicating what that threshold is and what the customer need is. You might have people that absolutely are deathly afraid of scorpions. Okay. Well, if you don't know that, and in Arizona we have a significant scorpion problem.
Right.
And it's cyclical. So like right now they've just had all their young and we're seeing a lot of little baby scorpions running around. If you're, that's a real threshold of pain to you, then you're going to be mad at me if I don't fix that.
Right.
But if I know that, if I know your threshold is of pain lives around scorpions, then I can tell you a month and a half ago, hey, we need to make some adjustments on your program right now because it's right around the corner.
Right.
Now we do that. Rodents, rats, all those things, they're all legitimate problems, but everybody's threshold is a little bit different.
So you're identifying the problem and then being proactive in the solution.
Yep. And making sure that the customer understands what you're going to accomplish and how you're going to accomplish it.
Which also continues to build the relationship and the trust between the two of you.
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
That's a good example. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Paul.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, every time I get my maintenance done on my unit, my, you know, air conditioning units and furnaces, I'm always looking out and kind of watching over their shoulder just because I'm curious. And then nothing disappoints me more when they don't tell me like what they did, what they saw, what are the good things, what are their concerns? Because I just want to know, you know, you just want to know. But I have another question. Back when you originally started this business and, you know, a couple years into it, did you ever have moments where you missed corporate life?
Ooh, no. No, I didn't.
End of story.
Me either.
No, I didn't. And really it was because I was challenged every day with something new. So the first month in business we did $800. That was my gross revenue for the first month I ran the company.
Sure.
$883. So my dad, of course, you know, he's a cheerleader. You know what? When we do $10,000, we're going to be making money. Well, I got to $10,000. We didn't make any money. He goes, well, you know, when we get to $50,000, we're going to be making money. Well, I got to $50,000. We still didn't make any freaking money. and so, you know, it was just this drive. You know, people ask me a lot about, profit margins and all those things. I'll be honest with you. I didn't crunch numbers like that. I'm a finance
guy. You're a finance guy, yeah.
Banker. I didn't crunch numbers like that.
Is it because you're too busy going?
Well, no, because numbers become a subset of taking care of the customer.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you have to know what your expenses are. You've got to know what costs are. You've got to know what margins need to be. But guys that spend too much time crunching numbers in the back forget that it's just a derivative of the service you provide on the front.
Boom.
So the biggest thing you can do is figure out how you can take a customer's mindset off of pricing and put it on to results. Be a result-oriented business, and then all of a sudden, price doesn't matter. Let's go to the AC business. If your AC breaks, are you calling 35 companies? It's going to be, what, 118 today?
Yep.
So are you going to call 35 companies to get a price? No. You're going to find the first guy that's going to come out there, right?
Oh, yeah.
I can be out there in an hour.
Speed is a necessity.
Yes. And so guys that have been, that guys that are really good in the air conditioning business have figured that out. Hey, that what they really want is they want us to be there. Now, once you get there, what do you do with it? If you can turn that customer into something where they go, you know what? I just spent whatever, $500. But you know what? It's cool. The guy was nice. He was clean. He smelled good. He was nice enough to say, hey, how are you doing today? Do you have any other problems? When was the last time you checked your water heater? Yada, yada, yada. Hey, you know what? I'm not in the AC plumbing business, but you know what? That's the way I'd view it. And it makes perfect sense because now they just spent $500 and I guarantee you the next time something goes wrong, they're going to call you because you took care of them. You eased their pain.
Yep. 100% agree. Customer service, numero uno.
Yeah.
So then how do you, I mean, 83,000, accounts is quite a jump from 43.
Yes.
How do you, I mean, obviously the market's gotten more competitive for you because it's Phoenix. I mean, and Phoenix is a massive market, but what do you guys do to continue to grow Burns?
That's the key. The key with the business is, if you're not going forward, you're going backwards. And you know, that's a cliche everybody hears, but it really is true. And so that's what I do. That's my job at Burns. My job is to see the future, to start to figure out how do we keep growing the business. Because I, again, family. I've got a son that's in the business now. I've got a nephew that's in the business. I've got a niece that's in the business. So there becomes a lot of mouths to feed, so I think that you have to make a decision on what your business model is going to be for the future. So you can build a business for profitability. And if you build a business for profitability, the chances are you're probably going to sell it because you're only driven by the money.
That's your exit. Yeah.
And I'm not that guy. I love money. Don't get me wrong. I love money. I have very expensive, and high tastes. There isn't anything I love to do more than go fast and spend money.
But it's not your driver.
It's not my driver. My driver is legacy.
Love it.
And my dad taught me that. My dad taught me, hey, the reason we build this business is for legacy, not for profit. I mean, again, does that make sense? We're
certainly
profit is not the driver. Legacy is the driver.
Yeah.
So if legacy is your driver, you only have one goal in mind, grow it,
yep.
Make it bigger.
Yeah. And if you do that, then the revenue will follow.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you're sharp and you take care of the customer, you put the performance ahead of everything else, the profit part will take care of itself as long as you pay attention to expenses.
Paul, what's up? I see you want to say something.
Yeah. So, I mean, I want to talk about growth. There has to be a temptation if you're in front of 83,000 people a year to add additional services, but it would appear you guys stay in your lane, right? Talk to me about that.
Wow. You know, that's a really controversial subject because,
for sure.
Because there are lots of models that have been successful at expanding into other markets.
Bobby Jenkins.
His model in Austin, San Antonio is grown tremendously around the HVAC, plumbing, home services side of the business
as a whole.
And he's done a very good job at developing that. And then you look at his brothers, and they're a little more. They're a little more square down the lane.
Right, right.
And so why don't they, why aren't the brothers doing that? It's not for everybody.
Right.
I have this thing, again, my finance background, I don't borrow money. I've never leveraged Burns ever except for one thing. The building I built on I-17, mm-hmm. I borrowed money for that to build it. I had a 20-year mortgage on that building, and I paid it off in 5.
Nice.
So it's free and clear. I own it. Here's the thing that scared me more than anything is if you're leveraged and things go south beyond your control, economy, coronavirus, whatever it might be, things go south beyond your control, I could never, ever look at myself and say, hey, mom, hey, dad, I'm sorry to tell you, you got to go get a job. Could never do that. Couldn't live with myself. So I've always put us in a position where I never leverage us. Short-term leases on automobiles, only money we owe. So my philosophy has always been grow as big and as quick as you can with the money you have. No, I don't leverage to go do that. So I don't buy other companies. I have bought literally 3 or 4 companies in our history. And they were all very small friends that were in the industry and they needed to leave. And so I made a deal to buy their accounts and just, you know, brought them in. Other than that, I don't acquire companies because one, it creates a leverage situation in most parts. Number two, it's really, really hard to bring those people into your core philosophies and your core values from a service standpoint, from a pricing standpoint. So the real point is grow it big at whatever you can afford to grow at. So I can only grow by a certain amount in 1984, 5, 6, where today, you know, I spend more in marketing than we did in, you know, 85, 6, and 7.
Of course. So I kind of heard that as like you're doing almost asset acquisitions, right, of their, and then so you get their accounts, you get, and did they end up staying and working for you, or did they?
No, most of them had a reason they needed to leave it, you know, a family matter, needed to leave the state or whatever. You know, we just acquired a company in Las Vegas, a small company up there, because the guy that owned it had his family owned a dairy, and so he needed to go help the family business.
Got it.
And you know, it was a situation that he really didn't have a choice. He needed to go help the family, and this was a distraction. So I, you know, we were friends. Boy, so I helped him out.
What a change to a dairy farm. Oof, I grew up on a farm, and there's a reason I'm on the technology side of things. Well, you talked about it, so I want to bring it up. There's no doubt you've done a great job on your brand. And it's something that we talk about because I believe that this whole COVID-19 thing really exposed a lot of companies. If you didn't have a great brand, you might have suffered. So if anything, it made you realize, I need to make sure I've got a really great brand. But you know, you talked about the marketing side of it. And clearly, for those who are maybe listening for the first time, I'm also the CEO of a company called Rhino Strategic Solutions, which is a digital marketing company only for the trades. But most already know that. So we do marketing. We're all internet marketing based. So being a financial guy, you're an analytical guy. We make every decision at Rhino based off of data. There's a little bit of gut and intuition that goes into things, you know, for the forecasting or things, probably much like your dad. I'm very much an entrepreneur. But it comes back to what's the data? Let's track everything. Let's look at what's going on. My assumption is you guys probably have done some form of tracking, like your different marketing to understand like its success. But what do you, like, what does Burns do to track success of some of your marketing efforts? Whether it be, I don't know if you're doing radio spots, TV spots, you know, like what all you're doing, but what is some of the things that you guys do to track the success of it?
Oh man, you know, that of all the things in my business life that have changed the most, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the 80s and the 90s, we literally did a radio commercial or we did TV commercials and we, you know, we threw money at it.
Sure.
And And they would, all the sales reps, the agencies, everybody would walk in with a sheet that says, "Hey, here's our demo."
Little pitch book.
Yeah, here's our demo. Women, 32 to 118, listen to our station. Come on, really?
Yep.
Yeah, 32 to 118. That's the demographic. Oh, okay. So that just means you're not a rock and roll station. That's all it means. And so, you know, there was no KPIs or anything that helped you make a judgment on whether or not advertising or marketing was doing well, other than direct sales.
Sure.
And so
to quantify it was really difficult.
Oh, it was difficult. So you would just kind of, I tried to really embed myself into marketing because I needed to learn that. That was not my expertise, and I needed to learn that. And so I went everywhere I could to learn about marketing from the get-go, okay? Because, again, you remember, I'm a number cruncher guy. I'm entrepreneurial, but, I mean, I needed the nuts and bolts of marketing. So I went to a seminar in Atlanta that was put on, and the speaker was the global advertising manager for Coca-Cola. And so I sat in there, got my notebook.
Take a note.
We didn't have freaking computer. Let's go into the cell phone stories later. I'll tell you how many quarters I used to carry to make phone calls with my beeper. But anyhow, so I know squat about marketing. So I'm there with my pen and pencil and I'm ready. The first thing the guy says is, "Coca-Cola spent $1 billion last year on marketing."
Did you check out?
I went, like, huh? I went, "Holy shit. Global marketing, $1 billion. I'm like, "Wow. Okay. How's it work? How do you measure? How do you know?" He goes, "We know 50% doesn't work." I went, "Shit, I need to know this now. Okay, let's go. Come on, I'm in. I'm hook, line, and sinker." You know, and everybody in the room who were beverage people, store owners, I'm a pest control guy, you know, people look at me like, "What are you doing here?"
Right.
All those people are going, "Oh my God, Coke's going to cut 50% of their advertising budget. They're going to cut $500 million out of their global advertising budget." The guy goes, "The problem, we just don't know which 50% doesn't work."
Oh.
He said, "So we're going to spend, $1 billion on global marketing again, because we don't know what doesn't work." So, and I went, "Are you freaking kidding me? How, you know, there's gotta be a way." And so jump ahead to, the early middle 2000s, you know,
yeah,
4, 5, 6, we started really, really entering the digital age. You know, we saw television marketing being augmented by digital marketing. We started to see the repurposing of ads into social media and just digital marketing. The onset of the smartphone, I think, changed the dynamic for everybody.
Oh yeah.
Because now all of a sudden we had this digital fingerprint of what people were doing, and we could start to tie that to a dollar. And so that's where, and for me, that was a real struggle, because now I'm not a young man, you know, I'm getting to be older. And so, you know, I'm not digitally challenged, but by no means like the young man over there behind the board, can I work on my smartphone, my computer, and still work the board at the same time? Dude, I'm having a hard time just talking in the mic and drinking water. What I did is what any smart business person does. When you don't know how to do something, you find the best person to do it and have them do it for you. So one of the things I did was I hired in a young man who is my data analyst. Great. And that's what he does for me. He works directly for me, and his job is just to crush analytics.
Love it.
And so then now we tie everything. If we spend a dollar, we tie it to a campaign. and we track the campaign. We have massive computer systems now that you know, when somebody calls in, their number pops up. We know if they're a customer or not a customer. We see what we see what services they have with us. We use Jot forms and things that are trackable on the back end. We use CRMs, customer relation managers.
Yeah, do you guys use a field management software? Like, do you have some sort of dispatch software that you guys use in field management?
Yes. Yeah. We're with a company called WorkWave. They have an industry specific, but they're part of a global company that does a lot of other. So they do HVAC stuff. They do landscape stuff. Okay. I use their pest control site software, and I sit on their advisory board. To talk about how we can make that software better. One of the things we don't do at Burns is we try not to use multiple pieces of software because you have a real hard time getting them to link and tie.
Yep.
So we try to get everything into one software package. So people out in the field with digital handheld equipment is getting and sending the same information to our commercial sales teams or our residential sales teams or whoever, and then, a termite inspector graphs a house, and that goes over to the rodent department, and they figure out how to market to them the rodent problems, and, you know, and we have data out.
I'm sure.
My gosh.
So this is going to be a really important question. Really important. Are you ready for this?
Sure. Go.
I'm from Indiana. You heard me say I grew up on a farm. I'm from the country, okay? Now, do you call them mosquitoes or skeeters?
Skeeter's a boat. It's mosquitoes.
I know. I'm just joking.
But for those of you on the East Coast listening, skeeters are a real deal.
Absolutely.
and you guys keep calling them skeeters. It's okay. And I'm not coming back there to market against that.
I was just there, but you would be surprised on the people that search for the keyword skeeter. But I bet you wouldn't be surprised on where the majority comes from.
Yeah, well, I think a bass boat pops up.
It does. It does. It really does. So that should tell you something. And if you're going to have a good marketing company, they better be telling you that. So I want to share with you real quick on that topic of, even with smartphones and things like that. When the smartphones came out, it was like a dream come true for us digital marketing guys. But what we love is that you can track everything. Now, when I came into the advertising marketing world, I started at Dex, which was Quest Dex back in the day. Remember? So the phone book. And I was there for 4 years, and I never quite felt great about what the end result was until there was call tracking numbers put in place. But if you had the red to this box and put it in this, like, I just was always bought into it because there was nothing that quantified that for me.
Mm-hmm.
So when they started to roll out the yellow pages, internet yellow page side of things, I really liked it because then you could start tracking it. And so I learned search engine optimization back in 2004. Like, that's back in the day for that world.
Yeah.
And so I just really liked, It was way different. But fast forward to today, this is how, when we started this company, I did this from on my own, and gosh, you're going to appreciate this and think it's miserable all at the same time. We still do the same things today. When somebody hired me to bring in new customers, because that was my job, new business, what I did was I put that call tracking number in place on their website. So if anybody called it, I could find out what was the lead. And then I needed to know for my own accountability is I would listen to every single call that came through the site, whether they came from my, pay-per-click or SEO or not, listen to it, date, timestamp it so I could see if it was during hours, after hours, what was the lead type, who took the call, did it come from SEO, did it come from pay-per-click, was the call booked, and then that way I could track not only the exact number of leads and give it to my customer, but I would track the cost per lead, and then I could also see how their CSRs or people answering the phone, if there was issues, I could catch it quick and send it over to them. But the point of that was, we learned so much of the, you talk about crunching numbers and data nerds, like that is a lot of what I love, is you would start to see definitively, I spent $1, I got X in return in new business. That's half the battle.
Yep.
But then it's identifying, where do I keep, where's this, like I, you had 187 new customers come in, you booked it at 18%. There's a problem, you know? And so it made us more of a partner versus a vendor relationship, which I genuinely believe is how we've grown this thing into the beast that it is because we track to that depth. Because listen, if you and I are sitting here having a conversation and I'm your doing your internet marketing, you're going to want to know to the dollar as a finance guy, what did my company do for you? Right?
You're exactly right. Because
that would dictate our future together. Yep. But if we did that and it was a great job, you also don't leave.
Nope.
Now we grow it because now we know, okay, I spend $2, I get X in return. I spend $3. That's how we built this thing. And the reason I wanted to bring that up is because you're a finance guy and you have that brain is that's how, whenever we started building this thing was if I could quantify everything that we're doing, not only do we know definitively what's coming from it, but we could be more of a partner by saying, hey, here's also the gaps that you're missing that I have zero control over. It makes a better partnership. Thus how we've blown this thing up, you know, into a really now a worldwide home services company since we're in multiple countries. So, but you guys have done a great job and the brand has always been solid as long as I can remember, even before I even needed pest control. And a lot of it has to do, you know, probably the reason you bought it on the 17, which is one of the major, you know, interstates here in Phoenix, is you got prominent sign placement right there where there's a lot of people driving by.
122,000 cars a day.
There it is. So of course you would know that. So now I want to, I know we're kind of getting into it. And typically if somebody's in here too, and we have a lot of good dialogue and you're sharing a ton of great stuff that's applicable to the majority of all of our listeners is, we skim past this in the beginning, but I want to come back to it quickly. It's not all roses and like, you know, rainbows and all that kind of stuff when you're growing these businesses. So, everybody's going to make mistakes. It's inevitable. You're going to make mistakes. It's how do you handle it and get through it? Because I would say, and you will probably agree, I mean, you've been in business much longer than myself, is you actually become significantly stronger from those mistakes. Because if you learn and actually take another action and you move on, it's how you handle those mistakes moving forward that make a big difference. So would you just share maybe like what's a mistake that you made that you're like, holy shit, this was a big mess up, but then you recovered from it and you moved forward and it moved the company forward.
I think early on, the biggest mistake I made was not understanding the value of what I performed.
So you mean underpricing?
Well, so I looked at the market and said, oh, okay, if my competitor charged 25, then I should do it for 20. And spending too much time on knowing what a competitor is charging and trying to figure out how to get under that, I think was a huge mistake for me. And it took me a little while to get over it. Because I didn't have a brand. Now I don't have that problem because I have a brand. When, you know, I can have a salesperson walk into a person's home and they say, we have termites. And they go, those are termite tubes hanging down. Those are termite tubes coming up. Burns can do X, Y, and Z. And, you know, we talk about the benefits and we talk about the brand, which they already know. And companies like ABC, Terminix, Orkin, you know, they've got that brand. Right. So people call them just because they trust the brand.
Credibility.
So So now I can walk in and you know, budget company A says, oh, we can do this for $200. And they look at the Burns proposal and it's, you know, $1,500. And they go, oh, gosh, you know, I could get this done for $200. I said, actually, you can get that done for $150 if you want. But you're going to get $150 worth of work.
Get what you pay for.
Exactly. And so, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do a year from now or 2 years from now when budget A has gone out of business? Or they're not around. Or they say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to service that. Burns has been in business 37 years. And you don't hear us say, I'm sorry that, you know, we're not going to do that. No, our job is to make sure that we keep the relationship solid and we take care of the customer. So that brand awareness, that brand trust is what now puts us into a position where I don't worry about what my competition charges for a service. I look at what we're going to perform, what our costs are associated with it. I crunch the numbers and we come out with a dollar. That's the dollar amount. It is what it is.
Paul, do you have something, buddy?
No, I mean, we could go so much further on that. As you look at the business, could you talk about, like, from an area, like, ranking the importance of training, finance, sales, marketing, operations? And I know that's a mouthful, but how would you, as you evaluate the business, how would you prioritize those?
Okay. So actually that's not that difficult. Okay. So, so one of the things I put in a few years ago, was, a program called Burns University.
BU.
Burns U.
Burns U.
Okay. So what I did is I had a personal coach for myself, a business coach, taught, you know, communication and just time management. Sure. And, you know, those types of things. If you don't have one, you should get one because they're worth their weight in gold.
I agree.
Okay. So I had one and I learned so much from him that I hired him for the company and I hired him in to take over Burns U. And here's what we did with Burns U. We took training and all of those core value ideas and we put them in a 1 week long program. So now every employee, doesn't matter which department you start in, what your job description is, you are going to go through Burns U so that you learn those core values, those general identification and training things, and what's important to us as a company, because that's what you're going to go do. Now, the rest of it, you know, sales, marketing, finance, they all take a back seat to that core value, because with 300 employees, it only takes one to screw it up.
Yep.
So you have to send them out with a toolbox that lets them understand what is our goal here. If our goal is only to make money, my gosh, you know, what's the number one reason people don't do what you want them to do? Because they don't know what it is that you want them to do. You haven't been clear. So you give a clear upfront contract of what your expectation is when you go to a customer's house. Then, now if you've given them all those tools, that takes care of training. Marketing is nothing more than the relationship building and keeping. So you can make my phone ring every day. I can pay you whatever, $1,000, and you can make my phone ring. Lots of people do that. It's what you do with that customer after they become a customer and keeping them. Do you know I still have a customer from 1983 on my books? Still have one.
One of the 43.
Yeah, one of the 43. She's still alive. She's still kicking. She's still doing service with us.
I hope she's giving you a review.
I don't know if she'd know what a computer is, but finance, you know, that's my background. So I feel very comfortable with that, but I still have, you know, I still have a CFO. I still have accountants. I still have, you know, outside firms that come in and audit and check. And then operations is one of those things that just continues to grow. You have to figure out, you know, how to manage the data and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah. So, makes a lot of sense, because if money was your driver, then sales would be your marketing, and sales would be probably at your core, but really you like training, like you hit the nail on the head. Well, I'll tell you what, you got something going right, because even after all these years, and I looked at, you know, a lot of times what happens with us is, at Rhino is we don't work with everybody. We're not an option for the masses and we saturate at some point, but we have an interest in growing just like you do. Right. So we have to make sure we align ourselves with like-minded companies who have a solid foundation. And a lot of times you can tell those things through the reviews, what other people are saying about you. And you guys have a pretty solid, I'm assuming between Vegas and, like, I know here in Phoenix you had, I think it was like 700, 800 some odd reviews at a 4.6. Like, that's solid. I mean, since 1983, you're doing something. You got it figured out.
Yeah.
So you've been able to maintain this brand, and that tells me, before I ever even meet you or use Burns, what can I expect from that company? What kind of credibility do they have? Because that's pretty self-explanatory. That's why reviews are so important. But you have to, what I heard you say crystal clear was, make it very clear on what you're doing for that customer and the value of that, and don't undersell the service of it.
Yeah.
Because it's about the quality of the service that you're offering, and then followed by the relationship that maintains the longevity of that relationship. And listen, if you're in plumbing, you might actually see that customer more frequently based on the different, things that fall underneath the plumbing umbrella. For HVAC, it would be if you do an installation or if you're doing service and you have a service level agreement customer, you're following up on them, say, in spring and in fall, in preparation for summer and winter based on the market. So there are these touch points along the way, but you don't just sell it, take care of it, and then move on.
That's what I love about this business, the pest control industry. The fact that I get to touch most of my customers multiple times, even in a month. Commercially, we've got accounts that we service weekly, daily, monthly at minimum. I love the fact that we're an integral part of that relationship, and we bring things to the table, not just things of the pest control nature, but other things. We see things that during inspection processes that maybe other vendors that don't go there quite as often have a problem with. We get to bring it up. We get to be a key instrument in the workings of our client's business.
Yeah, well, and you have reasons you have got to communicate with them always, right?
So, yes, absolutely.
So, we're over an hour and it's okay. It's totally okay. It's not uncommon for us because there's been a lot of really good content in here, and I'm grateful that you came in and you shared so much. There's a lot of little nuggets in there. I took a lot of notes. You see the scribbling on my page. So my last question is going to be a pretty simple one. It's not going to take much thought for you. But, as I've learned more about, pest control companies and what is important to some, it's not, the majority of the types of work are pretty consistent in regards to what you guys want to get as far as a customer goes. But you got to have the regular reoccurring revenue from your monthly customers. But what is the bug or the pest, either one, that you dislike the most? What's the one where you're like, even though I'm in this business, this is the one I really dislike? Or do you like, no, I love bugs. I'm in the bug business.
Wow. The pest I like least.
I've got mine. I'll share mine while you're thinking of yours.
I'm probably my banker.
Wait, do you have the technology to get rid of that pest?
It costs a lot, like, but we can we'll always work through
my
it.
Banker. I'll tell you this. I learned from our place up in Walker that bats are a massive pain in the ass. But you guys aren't dealing with bat stuff, right?
Oh, yeah, we do.
Oh, yeah, okay, good, because it is a pain in the ass, and I've spent a lot of money trying to get rid of it.
The problem with bats is most of them have some kind of protection over them. So you can't do things that you might do with other insects or other vertebrates that you would kill. Bats, you can't. They're protected. So you've got to exclude them. You've got to allow entry access type things. They're complicated. They don't bother me, though.
But so they only bug me because they're a nuisance.
Yeah.
In that manner. The bug that I like, first off, I don't like bugs, period. Like my little girl, I have a 5-year-old daughter. She'll pick up any bug. Like she grabbed a bee and stung her finger, and she's like, well, it stung my finger. Because she just care about bugs. And my son's the same way. But those scorpions are nasty, nasty little bugs. But I saw one last year for the first time, and it was called a spider
Sun spider?
That's it.
Sun spider.
That thing is one of the ugliest things I've ever.
They're pretty wicked looking.
Holy crap.
Harmless, but wicked looking.
Well, it didn't look harmless.
Yeah.
And I was walking from my courtyard door to the garbage can, and it was a decent sized bug. Like that thing was not small. And that thing scared the shit out of me. And my son was out there and made me, and that was not one of my prouder moments.
Ah. Now, I think probably now that I think about it, you know, the thing that I dislike the most is probably rats. I just can't.
Nasty.
I just can't stand rats.
Yep. I mean, really all across the board.
But most insects I actually like because I just see revenue.
Business. Yep. Makes perfect sense. Yeah. Well, listen, Dave, I'm so grateful you came on today. I appreciate you. And hopefully you had some fun while you're in here too.
Oh, I did.
This is the most quiet Paul has ever been. I don't know what's going on over there. Maybe it's because I kept railroading you. I have no idea.
You know what? I saw myself in his shoes because, you know, I used to live in Colorado. I lived in Texas. I had the option to move to Charlotte, which is where I am now. So I was like completely in that story of being a corporate guy to getting out of that world. But I do have one question, if I can have the final question, Chris.
You may proceed.
Thank you. So earlier you talked about legacy. What's your legacy going to be?
Well, so my brother Danny has two kids, my nephew Austin and my niece Amanda. Both are working in the business now. Austin was a professional motocross racer. He retired at the late age of 24. So he's joined the business. I have my son who was a 10-year professional baseball player. He's retired. He's joined the business. The average tenure on my executive team is 24 years.
Nice.
Okay.
That tells you something.
And they range in age from 67 to 24.
Wow.
Okay. And with that, I still have an average 20-plus year with my executives. So, my legacy is of course my kids. I would love to at some point see my granddaughter, my grandson, hopefully find what they love in life and know that this thing sits there when they're ready for it. I have, on my executive team, every one of them, there's not a single one that doesn't have a family member that works for me. We have 57 families represented at Burns.
That's awesome.
And so I think that's my legacy. I have lots of key people in our organization that have kids and those kids, hey, let's face it, they've got to do something in life. So if Burns affords them an opportunity and we're large enough now that it really doesn't matter what you do. You don't have to be the technician bug sprayer. We've got data analysts. We've got IT people. We've got marketing people. We've got lots of people that do a variety of different things in our company now. And that's, I think, is what's cool.
Yep. Feels good.
Yep.
Yeah. You're working with family. I mean, I think that's a pretty amazing little legacy, and we got one go around the sun. Got to get it right.
You got it.
Are you good, Paul?
Well, I'm good. I admire you. I think you're doing something really special. So.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, stop kissing ass. All right. So, so what I heard was the burn genes are pretty damn good. Well, again, I appreciate you coming on here, and you know, again, a lot of what you said is applicable across really any of the service businesses. I mean, it is very relational. And I genuinely believe, and Rhinos run the same way, is you take care of the customers, you do it right, you figure out all the little things along the way. But if you take care of them and you do whatever you can for them, you make yourself a leader in the industry, but the revenue has always followed. But I never use that as my driver. It's, you know, take care of them, retain them. The way you retain them is by giving them good service and making sure you got great relationships. So I heard you loud and clear when you said that. Congratulations on the business.
Thank you.
So cool. Your son's in it with you. You know, that would be an awesome feeling, I'm sure.
Nothing's better.
And 57 families is pretty cool for a company that went from 43 accounts in 1983 to over 83,000. So I commend you for a job well done and a great business. So listeners, hopefully you guys and gals got some really good information from Dave, and you're able to check some boxes again. And I hear some consistent things, you know, that we heard from multiple types of business, but I also heard some new things And hopefully you took that away as well. And so when you pull over, you'll jot down some notes, or I always say the same thing, use your voice notes, whatever it is, if you're working out, sitting down. I always encourage you to not just take notes, but to actually take action, because Paul, ambition without action is what?
Useless. It's
absolutely useless. So go out there and get it done. I want to give a quick shout out to just for a couple folks too. And again, for all those leaving reviews on the podcast, we're so grateful for that. And then some of the folks I've been doing this lately, just some people who've been reaching out to us through the different Facebook pages, but just a quick shout out to those who are new fans of the page is Allie Young, Brian Cohen, Crystal Curto, Jim Morrison Sr., Crystal Hyman, Robert Edwards, Mike Orhowski, who I talked to, Kelly McKay, Tim Burton, and Sarah Gerardo, which is Service Champions up in Northern. Well, she was. Now she's at Service Titan. What do you got from Kyle? You want me to give you a shout out on something? Oh, yeah, we're crushing on the downloads. Like, the downloads are up over 10,000, something or other like that, too, not even including the streams and the Android downloads. Like, so we're just so grateful on how much all you listeners continue to listen to the podcast and support it and share it. And all the positive things that you guys are taking away from it and applying towards your business, which is ultimately what our legacy is to, you know, we exist to grow your business, period. And Rhino's not the only way we get it done, so it's to the point. So again, Dave, appreciate you so much. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks, guys.
And listeners, until next time, we'll see you.
Thank you for listening to The Point. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please consider leaving us a review in the App Store. And don't forget to share with your friends. Till next time, kick some ass.
Welcome to The Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show. So stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point.